lighting film, which is usually the province of my producer, Donna Walker, on her show, Pacifica Performance Showcase, which I need to do a little side note a little later on in the program. But I'm happy to have these two people in studio because they're very old friends. Mr. Walter Dominguez, whose film, Weaving the Past, Journey of Discovery, is actually a journey of discovery about his own family. And along with them, of course, is his ever-lovely wife, producer, Shelley Morrison. Hi, guys. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
And I've always met you socially, Walter, I must say, over the years. And so I was very happy to learn about this film, but also very curious. How did this film come about?
I had had a very close relationship with my grandfather as a child. And he was a wonderful man. Years later, when he passed away, I didn't realize what a hole it had left in me until I was reaching midlife. And some events happened that pretty typical of midlife, people dying, and 9/11 happened. And I realized I needed to tap into some kind of spiritual renewal. And who came to me was my grandfather, his spirit. And so I began to wonder about his life, especially his early life, which had always been a mystery. And that's what set me on the journey. That, in discovering a photograph, that a photograph existed of a young revolutionary, Mexican revolutionary, I had known existed, and it turned out this young revolutionary, this young fellow was one of Mexico's great revolutionaries from leading up to the Mexican Revolution. He was one of the great intellects in the revolutionary movement. And my grandfather had grown up with him and was very close with him. This is something I didn't know.
And that stimulated you to go on this journey of discovery?
It did. It did. It.
It's not a lot to go on.
I know. But what happened is that sort of one thing led to the next. And
also part of that was that Walter, not having known that much about his grandfather and wanted to find out about it, he started interviewing a lot of the members of his family and to put that on record. And that's what's happening now. Young people who are seeing this film, all ages, after the film, after they see the film, they want to go and sit down with their relatives and record everything. And when you come down to the core, what's the most important thing? It's family.
Well, that was one of the fascinating things I discovered in watching the film. I think I sat down and watched it the same day that you gave it to me. Mm. And you discovered great extensions of your family throughout Mexico.
Yes.
And the fact that they would have this kind of sense memory of back to that would lead you to a logical connection back to your grandfather's early years, I thought was thoroughly fascinating.
Yeah, it was kind of miraculous, really. I didn't know anybody in Mexico. It went down there purely on faith. And one thing led to another. It took a few years, but eventually, as you saw,
took almost 12 years.
Yeah.
Took almost 12 years.
That's a little few, yes.
Well, the thing is that in many instances, Walter was led. It was almost like some unseen force was just taking him by the hand to meet the people that he needed to meet and to find out the stories and to find out what the next link in the chain was.
I'd had a dream a few years into interviewing people and trying to get answers on this side of the border. And in the dream, I dreamt that a curtain parted and there was this entire huge group of people. And it turned out they were family. They were my family I'd never known existed. So cut to some years later and it came to pass. But it was one of those dreams that you just knew that it had some great meaning, and it kept me going.
Well, I've seen documentary films like the rather extensive one that PBS did on the Mexican Revolution. And, of course, you get very used to names like Emiliano Zapata and Pancho Villa.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of historical importance, your grandfather was right up there. He was and without much glory about it. But he and his friend, his childhood friend, who was really a, I would love to see a film on this man's life.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. Prachet is Guerrero, and also Sarabia. And
some of the other associates,
Margon.
But Práxedes Guerrero, or Práxedes Guerrero, was a remarkable young man who, from an early age, had a very powerful social justice sensibility, even though he grew up as the son of wealthy landowners and on a hacienda in Mexico.
We took the photograph that Walter's parents found of Práxedes, and we ventured back to Mexico, to Pachuca, where they have this incredible museum, where we donated that photograph to the museum, and they had a special place. As you come into the museum, it's the first photograph that you see.
Wow. And there was something about this man, you know, Práxedes, is that mm-hmm. how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And your grandfather, is that it's one thing to pick up a gun and be very brave and foolish and go out and face the guns of the enemy. But they fought it on both sides. They were also intellectuals.
Yes.
Mm. So they also were involved in newspapers and writing about it, which makes it their lives even more dangerous to live.
That's true.
Yes.
You know,
that's true.
They'll shoot a revolutionary, but they'll blow up a writer.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just really fascinating. It's the desire to want to even know more that I found really very heady stuff.
Well, in terms of journalists, I mean, just what's happening today to journalists in different countries. I mean, they're getting offed one right after the other.
In Mexico right now, it's a very difficult time for journalists. And 100 years ago for these young journalists, it was also very dangerous. And so they had to flee Mexico because of the threat of being executed.
But these two young men, it's like the Motorcycle Diaries. It's nice.
Yes.
Yeah. Knowing about these two men, they made it up to Los Angeles in Alvera Street.
Yes.
Yeah, they did. They did. Ricardo Flores Magón, one of the leaders who is more famous, stayed on in Los Angeles. Most of the time he was imprisoned here in the United States. So it was Práxedes Guerrero, Práxedes Guerrero, who really led the Partido Liberal Mexicano, the PLM, which was the revolutionary party trying to overthrow Porfirio Diaz.
The film itself, Weaving the Past, Journey of Discovery, I was very fortunate that you gave me a DVD copy of it. But how will people know of this film? How will they see it?
Well, the first thing that we're doing right now is Walter and I are on the board of the Museum of Social Justice, which is being created in the Plaza Methodist Church on Alvera Street. And we are hosting a screening May 18th at the Linwood Dunn Theater. And all ticket sales, everything that, and it's a benefit for the museum, all the money will go directly to the museum. And if they want, they can go, what is the website?
They can go to the www.museumofsocialjustice.org, and there you'll find information about the museum and about the screening event.
And are you going to aim for the circuit after that, the
yes.
film festival circuit?
Yes. Already we've been invited to screen the film in San Antonio, Texas, where there was a lot of revolutionary activity before the outbreak of the Mexican Revolution. So there's quite an interest there in the film.
We want it to break out slowly, have the people, a grassroots movement. You know, we're not going to just try to push it into a theater and make a couple of bucks and just take off. No, this is our baby, long labor process. But it's people are discovering it, and so it'll take on a life of its own, and it'll give us. We love it, so we feel we've already succeeded. But it might be able. We're not going to get our money back. We put our own money into this film. We put our money where our mouth was, so we could do it the way we wanted to do it. But if we can get some money back from it, we've already started working on our next documentary.
Oh, good. Now, this is interesting to me because, Shelley, I've known you for quite a while. And through our mutual friend, Linda Dangso, who's sadly not with us any longer. And it was always, and this is my friend, actress Shelley Morrison. An actress indeed. Of course, everyone out there in KPFK land will know Shelley for the role she played as Rosario, the ever feisty maid on the long-running sitcom Will and Grace, And the first thing you'll probably say is, where's the accent?
Well, if you want to hear the real accent, because I'm from the Bronx, you know, if you want to hear that, you can hear that. But thanks to Will and Grace, Walter and I were able to take some of the money that I earned and not only take care of the family, but to put it into this film. We're low maintenance. You know, we have everything we need. We don't owe. So we don't travel on cruises and all that stuff. So we put our we put it into something that we love. And Walter is he's amazing. He truly is amazing. I'm always in awe. We have our production office downstairs in our house where editor and Maria, who is our wonderful, wonderful editor. And they're always calling me down, you know, take a look at this and take a look at this. And but he blows me away. I mean, his imagination. He had over 400 hours of footage. And how he's crafted this is just, it's wonderful.
And your next film you're working on is what?
It's called Whitewashed Adobe, and it's based on the book by William Devereaux, who's an incredible historian professor.
It's a history of the first century of Los Angeles, the time of its incredible rise. And it's the first time anyone's ever done a history of the of L.A.
From 1850 to 1950.
Now, I know my producer, Donna Walker, who is the producer of Pacific Performance Showcase, and also the wonderfully, wonderfully prolific KPFK Film Club, is going to be interested in both these films and possibly talking to you about the next film on the next time around.
Wonderful.
But I'd love to have you give me the information again about when's the first time this is screening.
Be screening Saturday evening, May 18th, at the Linwood Dunn Theater in the Pickford Center of the Motion Picture Academy.
It's on Vine Street.
It's on Vine Street, yeah, in Hollywood.
Well, I want to thank you both for coming.
Thank you for being given
the opportunity. Oh, by the way, next week, folks, Donna moves Pacific and Performance Showcase to Wednesdays from 2 to 2:30 from her previous time of Thursday at 2:30. And the LA Theater Works on the air is now going to be airing on KPFK Thursdays, 7 to 9 p.m. rather than on Sundays. So right now, this is your host, Julio Martinez, for Arts in Review. We're going to segue to the second half of the show, but I thought I would play a number that I had to do because it reminded me of the great boleros I used to do with our mutual friend Linda Donxell, sung by my very good friend. This is Somos by Jose Feliciano.
Nuestra quimera doliente y querida, dos hojas que el viento junto en el otoño. Somos dos seres en uno que amando se mueren. En secreto lo mucho que quiere, pero qué importa la vida con esta separación. Somos dos gotas de llanto en una canción.
And that is my good friend, Jose Feliciano, and the Bolero Somos. And we're going to switch focuses actually to what I usually do here, live theater. And I especially love to introduce new works. And this is a world premiere play, is it not?
Yes.
This is, and that lovely soprano voice you just heard is Mercedes Flores-Cislas, is that correct?
That's correct.
Wow. Who is the playwright, and you're actually in the play. And also in studio is Krista Gonzalez.
Yes.
Who's in the play, who actually plays Mercedes in the play. Is that correct? Or fictionalized Mercedes?
Well, yes, a fictionalized Mercedes. As Norman is a very brave character, unlike me, I guess.
But you're in the play as well.
Yes, I'm in the play. I have very small roles, but I'm in the play.
Can you tell me what the main focus of the play is? It's in trilingual because it's in Spanish, it's in English, and in American Sign Language, and has to do with a mother's struggle in terms of the safety of her son who only communicates through sign language. Is that correct?
We meet Norma at the beginning of the play where she finds out the diagnosis of the child. The child is deaf and he's an infant. So that gives her the motivation to flee. And that's the role that Cristal plays.
And I'm at a disadvantage because I'm going to be seeing this play soon.
Uh-oh.
So, but how all that works out dynamically on the stage. I have been involved in plays. Just recently, there was a play, a Deaf West production of Cyrano de Bergerac. Cyrano.
Troy?
Yes, with Troy, yes.
It's amazing.
And this whole just mesmeric situation of dealing back and forth between people signing and people speaking and doing it all simultaneously. And then you add now a third element to the play. I'm fascinated how all this works out.
You know what? I don't know how to answer that because this is my life. My son is deaf. So to, you know, move or to transverse in, or what's the word? To travel through the Latino communities, monolingual Spanish speaking, and then sign, that's my life. So for me, it's like, you know, it's very easy. It's my everyday life. You have to ask Crystal. I think she can tell you more about that.
Is this a new skill you had to learn?
Yes, and I am very grateful to have Mercedes as a teacher and have her son Michael be part of this cast. I have to be honest, I was afraid for a lot of reasons for taking the character Norma. At a personal level, I've also dealt with domestic violence, and I didn't know how my body, my heart, my mind, everything was going to connect to this character and reinventing Norma and just finding the honesty behind this character. And to be able to sign now and to be able to communicate on stage and to recognize a sign with another fellow actor, Lynn, who's playing Carla. She's deaf. She's an amazing actor. And to be able to be in a scene with her and understand her, not just pretend like I'm understanding, really understand her and feel her energy and be able to communicate with her on stage and off stage has been a blessing, because now not only are we two actors on stage, we're two mujeres who are understanding each other at a personal level outside. And I think that's what's bridging our communities together, not only as audience members, but also as working actors. We are understanding each other personally and professionally.
Now, I'm sure somewhere along the way in the play, the title, Tamales de Perco, becomes explained.
Yes.
Yes, and we're not going to give it away.
No.
No, we're not.
And this is at the New Casa 0101 Theater, which is at 2102 East 1st Street, at St. Louis Street in Boyle Heights in downtown Los Angeles. You opened on April 5th, and you're running through the 28th.
That's correct.
Month.
Weekends only.
Now, this is a brand new play, and you are the playwright. This is your baby. It didn't exist for anybody else until you gave it away to the directors and the actors. And as usual in a world premiere place, things do evolve when you become aware of the reality of what works on stage and what might need to be altered. Was it difficult to be part of that process?
It was very difficult for me to be part of the process because I've been teaching sign language for a long time. And when Eddie, who I trust very, very much, he selected Crystal to be the main role of Carla.
You're talking about Edward Padilla.
Yes.
Okay.
He's a great director, and I trust him. I trust his vision more than anything. So he picked this beautiful young actress to do the part of Norma. And when I first met her, she didn't know a single sign. So I panicked. And
I panicked too.
And then Eddie said, well, you know, just do this videotaping and she's going to learn from that. I'm like, no, that's impossible. It's never been done before. And she did, and she picked it up and she put a lot of energy into it. And then one day I came into the theater and I saw another deaf person I didn't recognize. Turned out to be this lady who is just signing away, unlike anybody I've ever seen before. Within 3 weeks she was signing. It's great.
Now, I once went to a play. In fact, it was Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, another production of East-West Players. And Troy, the actor you had mentioned before, was playing the part of Stanley Kowalski. You know, and then there was a speaking person, Stanley, up on the balcony because it was set in New Orleans. And I was sitting there, I was reviewing the play, but I was sitting next to a lady who was a writer who was reviewing for a deaf publication. And we were both sitting there, and I was watching the byplay going by, and she nudged me. She said, you know, what they're saying doesn't exactly always fit with what they're signing. And I had to realize that to communicate the meaning, the emotional meaning of the text by signing may not have the same road to communication that the words do. Is that true? I mean, is that what you find?
Yes, and this is mainly what's been happening on stage, I guess, is the meaning of what is being said is just being conveyed. It's an interpretation. It's not a translation. And there were several issues among the deaf actors there who had their own ideas about how something should be signed or said.
Oh, boy.
And, yeah, that was, I guess, the biggest difficulty we had to face during this production.
I think maybe through language we find that even when we translate from Spanish to English, there's something left behind in the translation. And something around the lines happened with ASL too. I found that I'm sometimes signing should before a different word and I'm saying it differently. So that was probably my biggest fear. I'm like, oh no, I'm signing wrong. But it's the correct way that a deaf person is going to understand the meaning behind the words that I'm saying.
Now, your son is in the play Mercedes, right?
Yes, that's Michael, yes.
And so he's playing the central character of the boy, right? Or
well,
is it?
No, he actually, my son, my 17-year-old boy, has a very small role.
Oh, okay.
And there's another hearing child who learns signs for this role.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And they're both very talented. There's two different little boys that come out in the play. One of them is Olin, and the other one...
Jaden.
Both are alternating, so.
I was realizing that what I'm looking at doesn't have a number for information reservation. Do you have a phone number? Oh, thank you.
We do have a number.
Oh, there, and now I do too as she passes me by the information. But you can get tickets and info by going to www.casa0101.org or by phoning 323-263-7684. That's 323-263-7684, right. And it is Casa 0101 Theater, 2101 East 1st Street in downtown Los Angeles, East LA actually. Mm-hmm. And it's a lovely complex that grew out of a very small hole in the wall into this little state-of-the-art, beautiful live theater area. I'm always really happy for that.
Yes, and it's very deaf friendly. It has a stadium seating, so we call it deaf friendly. It's a
they
really
can
great
see,
place.
People can see.
Yes, everywhere you sit.
Now, for you, Mercedes, it's one thing to have the play a rehearsal, to have written it. Did the play seem to change much when you actually put an audience in front of it, and what their reactions were? And I guess that's also a question for you, Crystal, because you have to get those reactions back. Sometimes you think this is a serious moment and they'll be laughing like crazy and you don't know why.
I think every night is a surprise for all of us on stage. We don't know how the audience is going to react. It's also we're bringing multiple audience members. We're bringing our deaf community in, our Spanish community in, our English. And sometimes you'll see they'll get the joke like a minute later. It depends when it hits. So it's been very interesting just to explore all that different energy that's been happening. But Mercedes, you could talk a little bit more about it.
Yes, and sometimes we get just deaf audiences, so that's when it's very quiet.
Of course.
Or the laughter is just nonstop. It's really interesting. And for me, too, it has been, as a social worker, the part that has been really interesting is that I get parents coming up to me or siblings and saying, you know what, my sister's deaf and we never signed to her. So that has been very moving to have this part that happens after the play.
So, Mercedes, this is your first effort as a playwright?
Yes, sir.
So, ma'am, are you thinking you want to keep doing this?
Oh, I would love to do this forever and ever. It's very rewarding. I'm not making a penny on this, but I never felt so rich in my life. The support that I have from this and the sense of connection that I have to others is amazing. I just love this.
And the play itself, it's running a specific amount of time. Is there a possibility you can extend, or have they talked about that?
Well, let's see. Maybe we can discuss that here, you know, until the end of the year, perhaps. But, you know, there's always a possibility of extending it for a weekend or an extra night during the week. But we'll see about, you know, we'll see how it goes with the sales, right?
Well, the name of the play is Tamales de Puerco, or pork tamales.
Tamales de Puerco.
And if you want to know what that means, you have to just go see the play. And you have till April 28th. And once again, I'll give you the number to call for tickets and information. It's 323-263-7684, or go to casa0101.org. And I want to thank you guys for joining me here. And it's lovely having you both on the show. And it's also great to talk about a work that a few months ago didn't exist at all. Mm. And now it's this entity that could really be a vehicle for moving people, giving people a new understanding about this community. Because this is going to be my first experience with a trilingual play.
You're going to love it. I look forward to seeing you there.
Well, thank you all for joining Art and Miu. This has been a little bit different because we have had two segments of the show. But I want you all to stay tuned to the very unusual comedy of Mr. David Feldman, who follows on Arts and Review. I will be back next Friday from 2 to 2:30. Remember, Pacifica Performance Showcase, produced by Donna Walker, will be on next Wednesday from 2 to 2:30. And thank you for supporting KPFK. You're the reason we're here on the air. We will see you next week. Bye.
The 11th Annual Indian Film Festival of Los Angeles celebrates the best of Indian cinema, running April 9th through the 14th at the Arclight in Hollywood, 6360 West Sunset Boulevard. Highlights include opening night's feature, Gangs of Wasseypur, and Mira Nair's The Reluctant Fundamentalist, as well as the closing night feature, Midnight's Children, an adaptation of Salman Rushdie's Booker Prize-winning novel. Other highlights include Mohammed Tamaya about gender identification and Pad Yatra, a green odyssey about an environmental trek to clean up trash in the Himalayas, along with a special Bollywood night tribute to Hindi cinema, shorts programs, and panels. KPFK is a proud media sponsor, and further information is available at kpfk.org. KPFK Film Club members are also invited to call the front desk for a pair of tickets to selected screenings at 818-985-2711, dial 0 for operator during business hours. And if you aren't already a Film Club member, please consider joining at kpfk.org.